all wrong. I, Igor, will show you how it's done, he said in a thick, rough voice. He struck a pose to display his muscular arms and chest, and Antaska's mouth dropped open. Then he took the bar from her hands and easily lifted it above his head. Now, you try, he said. He walked behind her and stood inches away from her back. Antaska was stunned by his overwhelming attractiveness and flustered by his sudden, unaccustomed, uninvited physical closeness, but she obediently raised up the bar. Her mind seemed to go completely blank as she lifted, and Igor pressed up next to her. He placed his large, firm chest against her back while grasping her forearms in his hands. Igor guided her arms up, saying, "Yes, this is the way." It didn't seem much different from what she'd been doing, but Antaska didn't say anything. She was both relieved and disappointed when finally he moved away from her. Looking to the front of the class, Antaska met the narrowed, angry eyes of Tilde. She looked down in guilty confusion. The second half of the class began. The trainers demonstrated basic kicking and punching moves and made the class repeat them many times each. Anyone who got tired or winded and stopped to rest was subjected to the intimidation of the trainers. Antaska was exhausted, but she kept going with the right foot kick the class was practicing. In spite of her best efforts, she looked up to see 7-foot-tall, muscular Tilde glaring down at her. "You are wrong. I will show you," said Tilde in a hostile, clipped tone. Displaying perfect form, Tilde bent one knee to support the weight of her body as she leaned to that side. Then she swung and kicked her powerful opposite leg hard into Antaska's ribcage. Antaska fell backward to the cushioned floor and curled up into a fetal position, clutching her stomach. She lay there momentarily unable to move from the painful blow. The instructor looked down at Antaska with a satisfied expression. "That was my warning shot," said Tilde. Then she turned and walked away. Antaska groaned. She felt her sore ribs. Were any broken? She had no idea how to tell that. The woman who had been exercising next to Antaska stepped close to her and looked down at her with concern. She was short and slightly plump, with bright red hair, pale skin, and freckles. "Are you okay?" she asked in a soft, concerned voice. Tilde spun around and faced her. "Do not talk in class, or you will join her on the floor," she said gruffly. The small red-haired woman returned to her place. Antaska wanted to stay down on the floor, but she pushed herself to sit up. "What is her problem?" she thought about Tilde. "That female has some real jealousy and anger issues. Obviously, this relationship isn't healthy for her. Or that poor guy. I will be doing them both a favor to break them up. Right?" "Wrong, wrong!" a tiny female voice spoke in her mind, accompanied by the image of Potat. Antaska felt her head. "I must have banged my head when I fell down," she decided. "Anyway, back on Earth, people were always grateful to get broken up. Because we were taught not to get attached. Because we would all have to go our separate ways with the Verdantes. It's kind of like that now, right?" she asked herself. "No, no," said the unwelcome voice in her head. Ignoring the voice, Antaska stood back up and got back to kicking and punching, feeling the painful burn in her ribs with every movement. During the workout, M. Hoyle had been anxiously watching Antaska, and he saw when Tilde kicked her. Then he kept watching after that to make sure she was okay. "Should I go over there?" he kept asking himself. I know you students are distracted on your first day in the gym with your new pets. The gigantic adult trainer Master Mitar addressed M. Hoyle's class. But I warn you that distraction is a weakness that will be exploited by your opponents. And to prove my point and teach you this lesson, I will take advantage of that weakness right now. Master Mitar looked around at the class, but M. Hoyle wasn't paying attention to the master. The big adult was more heavily muscled but shorter than most adult Verdantes, and he moved surprisingly fast for a being of his enormous size and bulk. He attacked M. Hoyle in a blur of motion. He dropped M. Hoyle to the floor with a kick to the legs, similar to Tilde's kick to Antaska's ribs, but less painful. That got M. Hoyle's attention. He looked up almost 10 feet at Master Mitar. The master was staring down at him with a stern expression, but the lifted corners of the huge green eyes in his broad-featured dark green face indicated some amount of amusement. Of all the students today, you are the most distracted by worry for your new pet, said the master telepathically. Your concern is a sign of great strength of character, but it can also become your greatest weakness if you let it. M. Hoyle stood up to face Master Mitar, decreasing their height difference to less than 2 feet. I understand that, but I can't help being worried about her. It looks like her instructors have singled her out for their personal attention. In fact, I would call it bullying. I think you should talk to them about that. And also, I would prefer if you call her my companion, not my pet, if you don't mind. M. Hoyle asked with some courage. It was not the place of the student to instruct the master in what he should do. The gigantic Master Mitar chuckled. Then he spoke in the prophetic manner that was often used by the adults and that M. Hoyle found so annoying. You are a brave and passionate one. I see that you are destined for greatness. Whether that will be great success or great suffering will depend on your actions and your reactions. Looking at the smaller picture, I don't have a problem with calling her your companion, he answered, pronouncing the word with extra emphasis. Thank you, Master, M. Hoyle replied with a nod of his head. I don't really care what she is called, the Master continued, but those two fitness instructors are my personal pets, my most perfect creations, and I won't interfere with their classes. They are the product of genes I carefully selected from the most athletic of the human pets I've had for over 1,000 years. During that time, I chose only Earth's top athletes to join me as my pets and as physical trainers for the Earth humans who travel to deep space. My life partner wanted beautiful pets, so I allowed her to design their physical attractiveness chromosome mixtures using DNA she selected from the most beautiful of Earth humans. The final result is what I believe to be the two most physically powerful and beautiful humans who have ever lived, said the master. M. Hoyle rolled his large green eyes, but Master Mitar didn't seem to notice. Over the 100 years, Tilde and Igor have been working with me as trainers. Their unorthodox methods have proven successful and beneficial to the human pets they have trained. I designed them as the world's two most attractive humans with the intention that they would become a romantic couple. And they are truly fond of each other, although their relationship has its rough spots, said Master Mitar. Oh, rough spots, said M. Hoyvel. That's only to be expected from humans. As you know, they don't have our ability to form deep bonds between life partners. Still, there are a few human couples who have stayed constant to each other while living among us as pets. Perhaps the influence of our positive example is what has made this possible for them, said the master. M. Hoyvel shuffled his feet. He felt like this explanation was more information than he needed, but the student did not interrupt the master. In any case, said Master Mitar, I don't think you realize that your companion also played a part in this drama. In your excessive observance of her today, didn't you notice that she encouraged the advances of my pet Igor? Or at the least, she didn't discourage him? If she hadn't shown such a weakness, Tilde wouldn't have become jealous and felt the need to defend her territory. Huh? At a loss for words, M. Hoyvel let out an exclamation of offended indignation. Are you saying that Antaska is responsible for the bad behavior of your pets? M. Hoyvel's resentment of Tilde and Igor overcame any objections he had about calling them pets. I'm not trying to blame or criticize Antaska. After all, she's no more flawed than any other Earth human. And even among the Verdantes, we have our faults. Can any humanoid ever be perfect? The master asked. What I'm trying to say is that if my pets have singled out Antaska for their special attention, it's a sign that she needs that attention. The universe always provides us with what we need, but we must be willing to accept that help in whatever form it is given. Huh? Said M. Hoyvel again. Yes, said Master Mitar. Be warned that your companion will have even greater challenges to face in the future. Be grateful that she's being forced to learn to defend herself against much stronger forces that may threaten her. And the universe is not providing this lesson for her benefit alone. It's clear that there's something you also need to learn from this experience in order to face what lies ahead of you. M. Hoyvel wasn't pleased by this explanation, but he bowed appropriately and answered, Yes, instructor. As Master Mitar walked away, M. Hoyvel's thoughts about him were less than appropriate. I wonder if he's just making excuses because he doesn't want to upset his precious pets. The adults always claim to have superior knowledge because they talk to the trees. I guess the trees are experts on the situation, M. Hoyvel thought sarcastically. The large instructor turned back and looked at M. Hoyvel with the corners of his eyes lifted in a smug smile. Do not ever assume that I don't know what you're thinking, he said. A loud but melodious gong sounded throughout the gym. Time for exercise is over. Tall, beautiful Tilde shouted at the class of Earth humans. Antaska was relieved. The room darkened, and the occupants of the gym, both Earth human and Verdante, all sat down for a final stretch and cool down. After 10 minutes, the gong sounded again, and the light in the room brightened. They all stretched and rose to their feet, and the Verdantes came to collect their human companions. Antaska slowly stood back up, pushing against her body's aches and stiffness. She was still in the painful process of straightening back up to a standing position when M. Hoyvel reached her side. Are you okay? Do you need a hand getting up? He asked her. His enormous eyes were wide with what she recognized as concern. Antaska was touched, and she wanted to grab onto the big green hand, but she looked over and saw the two fitness instructors watching her. If he helps me up, they'll see that as a sign of weakness, she thought, until they will think she's beaten me down. Thank you, but I'm fine. I can get up by myself, said Antaska. Okay, if you're sure, said Imhoival. He dropped his hand back to his side and waited. Then they walked together out of the gym. As each of the students exited, a blue light filled the entranceway. Imhoival paused to let Antaska go through first. Then he followed. Just outside the door, a disembodied voice spoke out loud. 4 of the left ribs of this human are badly bruised, but not broken. Place a cold pack on the ribs for 20 minutes. A small compartment opened up in the wall on the side of the doorway. Inside was a round, soft-looking liquid-filled object. Imhoival reached in and removed the cold pack. He handed it to Antaska, and the opening in the wall closed again. I'm relieved to hear that nothing is broken. Hold this on your ribs, and it should help you feel better, Imhoival told her. Antaska placed the pack on her sore ribs, and it did seem to help. She walked slowly, distracted more by thoughts of Igor than by the pain. I guess this is proof that he really is interested in me, she thought giddily. Similar thoughts about Igor swirled uncontrollably through her mind, accompanied by visual images of his physical perfections. Up close, he was even more beautiful than I imagined, almost like a work of art. Perfectly sculpted cheekbones and straight nose, not too small, not too big. The power of his intense gray-green eyes was irresistible. He really is the most handsome and physically fit man I've ever seen. How could he even notice me when it seems like the world's most beautiful woman is his partner? Antaska asked herself with a pleasurable surge of vanity. Imhoival was walking at a slow pace that was easy for Antaska to keep up with. He didn't speak until they were inside their main room. Are you okay? He asked again, looking down at her. Do you want to see Dr. Daji? Those trainers were much too rough on you. Antaska could sense some emotion in his facial expression and his words, and she was touched by his concern. At this moment, the beginning of a small but very real bond between them began to form. I'm sore, but I don't need to see the doctor. The voice at the gym door said nothing is broken. Thank you for asking, she answered. In Antaska's mind, the thrill of Igor's interest far outweighed the price of pain she had paid. She felt a strong urge to tell someone about what had happened, but definitely not her new employer, Imhoival. Okay, but tell me if they get too rough, and I'll do something about it, Imhoival promised. Would you rather stay in the rooms and rest now instead of going to the meeting with me? No, I want to go to the meeting, Antaska answered. He nodded, and they both went into their separate rooms to shower and change into their ship suits. In Antaska's room, Potat was still asleep on the round pillow on the round bed in the exact position she had been in when they left. Antaska sat next to her on the bed, and Potat opened her tiny golden eyes to stare up at her. Then, Potat got up and rubbed softly against Antaska's bruised side, purring loudly. Antaska petted her lightly, but felt too sore to pick her up. Bursting with the need to talk about her experience in the gym, she spoke to Potat. Something really interesting has happened. The most gorgeous, most buff man you've ever seen was looking at me in the dining hall. And today, he came right over to me in gym class. I think he's interested in me, even though he may already have a partner who is amazingly beautiful. Well, sometimes people change partners. That happens all the time. That's how it was on Earth. Maybe their relationship is ending and he's looking for a new partner. What do you think? Of course, Potat didn't answer. She didn't seem to be interested in the story at all. I must have been crazy to think this cat was talking to me before, Antaska thought. She doesn't care about my love life. I care, but you don't listen. Antaska imagined that Potat was answering her. Yeah, I must have hit my head too, Antaska said. Potat looked up at her and meowed. Hello? Antaska imagined the cat voice was saying. She bent over painfully to give Potat a small hug. Then she sat back up with a groan. I have to shower and get ready for the meeting now, Antaska told her. I'd like to take you, but I don't know if that would be allowed. I'll ask Imhoival about it, and maybe you can go next time. Potat continued to circle around her, purring and pressing against her sides. I'm fine, Antaska insisted. She stood up slowly, still feeling the pain in her ribs, and got ready for the meeting. Imhoival waited for Antaska in the main room. He carried his backpack and computer. They were really going to one of his classes, but he had told Antaska it was a meeting. He wasn't sure if she was ready to find out yet that he wasn't really an adult, and this wasn't really a job. Antaska came out with Potat right behind her, but instead of standing next to the door and meowing like she did the last time they went out, Potat stopped in the middle of the room. She must not want to go with us this time, Imhoival thought. Potat looked up at him and blinked. A low, female voice seemed to echo in his mind, but he couldn't make out the words. I'm sorry, but I can't hear you very well, Imhoival apologized to her telepathically. Potat blinked at him again, then circled around the main room and headed into his room through his open door. That's not your room, Antaska called after her. Imhoival's eyes curved up in a smile. It's fine, he told Antaska. She can't break anything in there. Knowing Potat, she might try. She loves to rip up couches and chairs, said Antaska. Oh, that's okay, said Imhoival. All the furniture is self-repairing. He palmed the door opener, and they went out and on their way. On the way to class, Imhoival thought about what had happened to Antaska in the gym. It didn't escape his notice that she was probably interested in the unearthly attractive male trainer, but she was an adult of her species. The rules for the treatment of humans didn't allow him to interfere with their mating behavior. He could give her advice, but he was sure that she would resent it. In any case, he really didn't want to talk about it. Still, he was worried. What if something worse happened next time? He didn't know what he could actually do, but he was determined to protect her. Chapter 8 Antaska walked with Imhoival into the circle-shaped meeting room, and she heard more of the now familiar whispering sounds. The room held about 30 large desks, placed so they curved around and faced a larger desk placed at the back. The ceiling was higher than the one in the main room in their quarters, but lower than those in the dining hall and gym. It had the same domed shape Antaska had seen so far in all the rooms in the spaceship. Verdantes, who were the same size as Imhoival, some accompanied by Earth humans, some not, entered the room and sat at big desks. Each desk had at least two chairs, one large Verdante chair and one or more smaller human-sized chairs with attached stepladders. Imhoival first led Antaska to a side wall. He opened a compartment and handed her two drink tubes. Then he took four more for himself, easily holding two in each of his six-fingered hands. Then he led her to an empty desk. He pulled a computer tablet from his backpack and placed it on the desk before sitting down. And Taska was temporarily distracted from both her sore ribs and her thoughts of Igor by the sound of loud whispering. She climbed the steps to her chair and sat down. Then she looked around the room and recognized some of the humans from her exercise class, but not all of them. And Taska wondered if the rest of them had stayed in their rooms, resting and recovering from the intense, unaccustomed workout. The red-haired woman who had spoke to Antaska in the gym was sitting a few seats over. She smiled and waved when Antaska looked her way. Antaska smiled and waved back. "It's nice to see how you humans can socialize so easily," Imhoival said. Antaska smiled up at him. She remembered what he had told her about the Verdantes' social problems, and for the first time, she felt kind of sorry for him and his species. The room was quiet except for the voices whispering in Antaska's mind. She ignored them. "I know it's from that bump on the head," she told herself. Now that she was sitting still, the pain in Antaska's ribs came back. Her body and all her muscles were exhausted from the hard workout. She tried to keep her back up straight, but the effort was too much, and she slumped. Imhoival was still looking at her. "The dark green drink will help you recover from the workout and get stronger," he said. Antaska suddenly felt very thirsty. She took a big drink from the dark green beverage tube. "That one not only has fluid to rehydrate your body, but also protein, simple and complex carbohydrates, and a small amount of healthy fat. Everything your body needs to build new muscle tissue," Imhoival said. Then he also lifted a tube of dark green liquid to his mouth and took a long drink. Suddenly, the whispering noises stopped, and the room became absolutely silent. One of the larger-sized Verdante males entered the room. He walked to the big desk at the back. At under 10 feet, he wasn't as tall as the largest of the aliens Antaska had seen so far. And he seemed to be older, with graying green hair and deep wrinkles on his dark green-skinned face. Bushy gray-green eyebrows topped enormous slanted eyes. Before sitting down, the huge green man stood and silently looked around the room. Then the whispering sound was back, a low and rumbly deep male voice. All through the meeting, no one spoke out loud. Antaska assumed the large man was speaking telepathically to the group. The Verdantes sitting at the desks stared toward the front of the room at the larger man. He said nothing, but looked back and occasionally waved the six fingers of both hands. Many of the Verdantes typed on computer tablets like Imhoival's. Every so often, one of them would raise up a hand. The big man would look over and sometimes point with his own wavy-fingered hand. At those times, Antaska heard the whispering of higher-pitched male or female voices. As much as she tried to deny it, Antaska couldn't help but wonder if she was hearing parts of the Verdantes' telepathic speech. Could it be possible? She asked herself. But Imhoival said humans don't have any telepathic abilities. That's what makes us useful in space as companions. If I were telepathic, then I wouldn't be able to go on this trip. And Taska's anxiety grew stronger. I'm not telepathic. I can't be telepathic, she insisted to herself. Whatever I'm hearing is my imagination, and I won't pay any more attention to it. Blank expressions began to appear on the faces of the Earth humans who sat sipping from drink tubes. Antaska might have been bored by this meeting too, but her mind turned to thoughts of Igor. Physically, she was starting to feel better. and she was content to sit sipping her drink and take comfort in the large presence of Imhoival. After about 15 minutes, the meeting became more interesting, and thoughts of Igor fled from Antaska's mind. An enormous floor-to-ceiling 3D holographic image appeared in front of the large alien's desk. A planet floated in space with strange symbols written in the air above it. The giant man stood up and walked around inside of the image. He waggled his arms and fingers about and pointed a long wand at various features shown in the hologram. The panoramic image zoomed in to show features of the desert planet's geography, then closer and closer to show trees and buildings, and then some odd-looking humanoids. They wore long, dark midnight blue cloaks that partly hid their dark blue faces. The camera zoomed in to show sharp, planed, but otherwise humanoid faces and heads. Their metallic skin reflected light and was difficult to focus on. Pale white clouds floated and swirled in their strange eyes. Antaska felt the tension in the room increase as the big man continued to wave his hands and wand at the holograph. It showed more images of humanoids, animals, and other life and non-life forms on the same planet. The Earth humans no longer looked bored. They stared intently at the moving images along with their Verdante companions. Again, many green hands were raised. The big green man would point at one of the hand raisers and the hands would go down. During this time, something familiar about this meeting began to nag in the back of Antaska's mind, but her interest in the holographic images kept her from focusing on that familiarity. Finally, after almost an hour, the holograph faded. The gigantic alien seemed drained of energy. He walked with heavy steps back behind his desk and sat down. His huge green head rotated from one side to the other as he stared at the meeting attendants. Then he sat still, seeming to look at nothing in particular. This meeting was really more like a lecture, Antaska thought. She watched many of the Verdantes get up to leave with their human assistants. A few others left their human assistants sitting at the desks and walked toward the large alien at the back of the room. The smaller body size of the Verdantes in the audience compared to the lecturer now reminded Antaska of a classroom of younger students and an older teacher. But how could that be possible if Imhoival is a full-grown adult man? She asked herself. Wondering about this strange similarity, she looked up at Imhoival. Class was over, and Imhoival stood up. "It's time for lunch now," he told Antaska. He waited for her to climb down from her chair. Normally, he'd go to the teacher's desk and ask some more questions about the subject of this lecture, the treacherous Wooga species. But today, he didn't want to make Antaska wait in the chair any longer than necessary. They left the lecture room and walked to the dining hall. Imhoival adjusted his stride to Antaska's much shorter one. She was going even slower than usual, and he worried that she might still be in pain. After they were seated with their meals in the dining room, Imhoival was ready to talk vocally to Antaska again. He thought he was getting quite good at it, and he was learning to eat and drink in between talking, so it wasn't disruptive to his meal. "How are you feeling now?" he asked. "I'm still a little sore and tired, but mostly feeling better," Antaska answered. Imhoival was relieved. "Do you have any questions about the meeting?" "Yes, I do have some questions," she answered after a moment. "I was wondering about that. It seemed more like a lecture than a meeting. Is that right?" "You are exactly right," said Imhoival, pleased by her astuteness. He took another bite of his food. Antaska continued. In some ways, it reminded me of my classes in school, with the teachers much larger in size than the students. I think you said that the bigger Verdantes are much older, and that you'll get taller when you're older. Does that mean that you're a child? And Tasca, she sat back in her chair, looking at him and waiting for him to answer. M. Hoivel took a big drink from his beverage tube before replying. He hadn't been expecting this question so soon. In fact, many Earth humans never got around to asking it. Sometimes, much older humans figured this out, but they were usually closely bonded by then and not too upset by the revelation. M. Hoivel worried not only about Antaska's reaction, but also about the other humans sitting near them who might overhear his answer. Maybe because of his unusual behavior in speaking vocally to her during the meal. The two of them were even now the object of the attention of many of the other Verdantes and their human companions. "I'll answer that question when we're back in our quarters," M. Hoivel said at last. "It needs some more explanation, but this isn't the place to talk about it because others might be listening. Those who have not asked the question or even thought of the question aren't ready to hear the answer." M. Hoivel was somewhat embarrassed to find himself talking in the manner of the adults, but Antaska just nodded her head in agreement and went back to eating her food. They ate the rest of their meal in silence, but M. Hoivel carried on conversations with his friends, both telepathically and by using sign language. The other Verdantes were both impressed and concerned to hear that Antaska had asked him about school and their actual relative ages. Many suggestions were given about how he should answer, along with warnings not to give out too much information. After lunch, M. Hoivel and Antaska walked back to their quarters. This time, M. Hoivel walked slower because he was thinking about the discussion they would soon have. Although the time they had been together so far was not long, he realized that owning her had already provided many unexpected challenges. He didn't believe everything Master Mitar said, but it seemed likely that in the future she would provide even more tests for him as the person legally responsible for her. M. Hoivel looked down at her, a small figure walking by his side, as he thought about this possibility. And he had no doubts that he had made a good choice. The trip through space could get dull while traveling long distances between inhabited planets, and it would be more interesting with a challenging companion. Chapter 9. Back in the main room of their quarters, Antaska sat next to M. Hoivel on the big curved couch. She felt like a child again as she swung her dangling feet. She also felt somewhat foolish for thinking that this very large man might be a child. "Mew!" Antaska heard from across the room. Potat walked confidently out of M. Hoivel's room with her tail lifted high. She crouched low. Then she sprang up in the air several times higher than the height of her body and landed on the couch in between the two humanoids. Potat sat up straight and alert, as if waiting for the conversation. Her ears were open wide for maximum reception. M. Hoivel began his explanation. "You're right that the much larger Verdantes are full-grown adults, and those of us who are smaller are not yet fully grown. However, that doesn't mean we're children." "Baby, baby," Antaska heard that small female voice talking in her head again. "I am not a baby," Antaska heard the voice of M. Hoivel answer back in her head. Antaska shook her head, trying to clear it. "No," she told herself. "I did not hear anything." M. Hoivel lowered his eyes to frown at Potat. Then he continued talking out loud. "My physical growth stage is actually at the point of just starting adolescence, but I'm 650 years old. My comparative mental age is much older than the longest living Earth human. He looked at Antaska, waiting for her response. Again, Antaska thought she heard the small voice of Potat repeat the word baby. Antaska ignored the voice. She was stunned to hear her suspicions confirmed by Imhoival. But most of the Verdantes on Earth who help our species are smaller than you and younger than you? I heard they're between 400 and 600 years old. Are you saying that our planet has been overseen all this time by children? Antaska asked. Physically, the Verdante supervisors on Earth may be children, but their mental capacity is beyond that of your oldest scientists. Imhoival answered. They understand and provide your race with technological and medical advances that have more than doubled your lifespans from what they were when we first made contact with you about 10,000 years ago. I guess, said Antaska, but they're still children, really, right? Here's another comparison. Take the example of your own age of 50. Imhoival said. Physically, you are now a young adult. Before the Verdantes started helping Earth humans, a woman your age would have been in her late middle ages, soon on her way to old age. Just a few hundred years before that time, most Earth humans didn't even live to be your age. And if the life expectancy of your species doubles again in the future, a woman your age will just be starting adolescence. At the same growth stage that I'm at. So if you were a member of a species with a lifespan that was twice what you have now, would you think of yourself as a child? Antaska thought about Imhoival's somewhat confusing explanation. In a weird way, it made sense. But on the other hand, it stirred up even more questions in her mind. I understand what you're saying, she said finally. But I don't understand why you would send children among us to act as our trainers and supervisors instead of sending adults. It seems like the adult Verdantes were hidden from us. Why? There's a very simple answer to that question, said Imhoival. Our children are closer to your species in size than our adults, and therefore less disturbing. Our sociologists studied the Earth humans for some time before the first contact. They determined that your people would be frightened by a much larger, alien-looking species. Actually, most humanoids are. Antaska turned and down looked at Tiny Potat by her side. The little cat didn't seem frightened at all. She was calmly washing first one paw and then the other. Anyway, as you probably learned when you studied your history in school, the humans of Earth were quite violent at the time of our first contact, Imhoival went on. They frequently used deadly weapons if they felt threatened. Of course, our superior technology would have prevented them from harming us, but our goal was to establish a peaceful, harmonious relationship and to be seen as your benevolent helpers. It was decided that the quickest way to do that was to send those of us most similar in appearance to your race, our children, as our representatives. Are you saying that your people left children alone on another planet unsupervised, trusting them to supervise the planet's inhabitants? Antaska asked. She still wasn't able to entirely grasp the logic of what Imhoival was telling her. Oh no, they were never left alone, he assured her. Many full-grown adults, as well as various adolescents, have been living on Earth with the children from the beginning, but they never show themselves to the Earthlings. The adults stay inside the restricted area we set up on your planet, but they're always there monitoring and directing things. Believe me, you can't get away from them wherever you go. Imhoival finished speaking with what sounded like resentment in his voice. Then he flopped backward and rested against the back of the couch. After this long amount of use, M. Hoivel's vocal cords started to feel the strain. He paused, pulled out two drink tubes from the wall cabinet, and offered one to Antaska. M. Hoivel took a big drink. He drank thirstily from his tube and watched Antaska drink from hers too. M. Hoivel hoped it was a sign that she was getting tired of talking too, but he looked at her, waiting to see if she was going to ask him anything else. "I'll keep talking if I have to," he told himself. Antaska was silent for a moment. Now M. Hoivel wondered if she was disturbed by what he had told her. He had been warned not to say too much, after all. "Are you upset by what I told you?" he asked. "No, it's just very different than what I thought I knew about the Verdantes," Antaska said. "But I guess it's not a problem for me. I need some time to think about this. Then I'll probably have some more questions, if you don't mind." "I don't mind at all," answered M. Hoivel. He was relieved that he wouldn't have to keep talking. "There's just one thing I have to ask of you," he said. "Please don't give this information to the other Earth humans. As I said earlier, we believe that the only time to answer such questions is when they're asked. When the truth is right in front of someone's face and that person doesn't see it, that's a sign of not being ready for the truth. If you give people the answers before they're ready to hear them, it can be very disturbing and lead to possible emotional problems. I'm sure you wouldn't want that to happen." "I won't say anything," Antaska agreed to his request. "You need to start seeing the truth soon," M. Hoivel heard a soft female telepathic voice say. He looked down to see Potot sitting on Antaska's legs and staring up into her eyes. A deep chiming noise sounded, coming from no particular direction or device in the room. "It's time for my next class. Astronomy," said M. Hoivel. He felt relief at not having to continue the pretense of going to business meetings. "Would you like to go with me? Or would you rather stay here and rest? I know you've had a hard day already," he said to Antaska. "I like astronomy, and I'd really like to go, even though I am kind of tired," she answered. She took the news very well, thought M. Hoivel with relief. He stood up and walked with Antaska toward the door. He hadn't admitted to himself how worried he'd been that she might experience some type of emotional or mental breakdown. By showing herself to be resilient and adaptable, she has once again confirmed my superior abilities in choosing a good companion, he silently congratulated himself. When they reached the door, M. Hoivel heard a small meow. Potot had followed them and seemed intent on going along with them to class. M. Hoivel looked down at her, forgetting his former feelings of resentment. It was difficult for him to stay mad at such a cute, tiny creature. "I'd like to take you along, but I don't know if the instructor will allow non-humanoids in class." M. Hoivel chose his words carefully and spoke out loud for Antaska's benefit. "I'll ask the instructor if we can bring you next time," he promised. "I'd really like to take you," Antaska said too. But Potot turned without another look at either of them and walked on stiff legs back toward the door to Antaska's room. She seemed to communicate displeasure by bristling her fur and switching her gray ringed tail rapidly back and forth. Its cottony white tip pointed accusingly from side to side. M. Hoivel's astronomy class was taught in the same room as his last class, which Antaska learned had been galactic politics. A similar amount of male and female Verdante students filled the room, but less Earth humans were present than had been in the last class. Antaska wondered if they were exhausted from the hard workout, too, and resting in their rooms. Or had some been bored by the long presentation they could see but not understand? And Tasca was tired too, but she was curious. As soon as she entered the room, Antaska heard whispering voices. She remembered what Imhoival told her about building a mental wall, and she tried it. She concentrated on blocking out the whispers by picturing a wall in her mind between her and the sounds. Suddenly, the whispers were gone. It worked! The instructor of the astronomy class was a 10-foot-tall, green-skinned female with large, light-green eyes and shoulder-length light-green hair. Her bright red ship suit emphasized her green coloring, and she was clearly younger than the political science teacher, with very few lines on her large, heart-shaped feminine face. A holographic display of the galaxy appeared above the raised platform at the back and center of the room. Antaska sat up straight in her utilitarian chair and watched in fascination. The view zoomed out to show the Milky Way as a part of its local galactic group. Then it zoomed out even more to where it became too small to see a part of its local supercluster. The instructor pointed her wand to a spot within the supercluster. Antaska wondered if she was showing them the spaceship's approximate location of the Milky Way. The hologram changed and displayed more astronomical features. Antaska thought she recognized some, but not most of them. She felt a longing to understand what was being taught. Maybe I could understand some of this if I stopped trying to block it out, she thought. But as the idea grew more appealing, another part of her brain protested and quickly shut down this line of thinking. And with that, a dark cloud seemed to descend in Antaska's mind. She found herself numbly watching a rotating 3D view of what looked like black holes and ignoring the whispers for the time being. Into her mental numbness, thoughts of Igor returned. Antaska felt a compulsion to solve the riddle of his true intentions towards her and the solidity of his relationship with Tilde. Intriguing questions and possible answers circled endlessly through her mind, causing her to experience mingled feelings of guilt and pleasure. When the holograph faded and the teacher sat down, Imhoival told Antaska he would be right back. He walked to the back of the class and stood at the end of the short line in front of the teacher's large desk. The teacher and each of the students stared silently at each other for a few moments. Then the students turned and walked away. Absorbed in her mental fantasy world, Antaska waited patiently as Imhoival moved up in line to take his turn. Imhoival spoke to his teacher. The lecture today was fascinating, he said, beginning the telepathic conversation with a compliment. In addition to my human companion here today, he said, with the snaky wave of his six-fingered hand toward Antaska, I have another pet in my care. She's actually the pet of my human, a small feline, and she's very interested in astronomy. She expressed the desire to attend classes with us. Would you mind if I bring her to the next class? Are you asking me if you can bring a non-humanoid animal into my class? Asked the instructor in amused disbelief. Well, yes. They're actually sentient, you know. She's very well behaved, he said, stretching the truth a bit. And she won't be any trouble in the classroom. The enormous light green eyes of the big teacher crinkled up high and seemed to glow with bright amusement. She laughed loud, but unheard by Earth human ears. I'm very sorry, but I can't allow that. It's critical to your upcoming travels in space that you and the other students develop a thorough understanding of this complex subject. Even a well-behaved animal would prove to be a distraction to the serious learning that is the purpose of this class. Imhoival hadn't expected her to agree, and he accepted this answer gracefully. He bowed his goodbye and returned to Antaska. She climbed down the steps from her chair, and he told her he'd asked the teacher if Potok could attend class, but she wouldn't allow it. And Taska nodded vaguely. M. Hoivel noticed that she seemed distracted. He wondered if the class had been boring for her. It's too bad she can't understand the teachers, he thought. When they got back to their quarters, M. Hoivel spoke to Antaska again. I need to do some homework till it's time for dinner. Okay, said Antaska. I'm really tired now. I think I'll take a nap till then. M. Hoivel looked into Antaska's room and saw Potat asleep on the bed. He was relieved that he didn't have to tell Potat yet that the teacher wouldn't allow her in class. He knew it would be a disappointment to the little cat. Maybe there's somewhere else I can take her. He thought about some possible options. I'll get you when it's time for dinner, M. Hoivel told Antaska, and she walked away to her room. Chapter 10. At dinner, Antaska felt an undeniable curiosity to learn whether Igor was paying any attention to her. She still couldn't believe that such a superbly shining star of a male could really be attracted to her. Antaska looked his way and was shocked. He was looking directly at her with the same intense stare as on the previous day. Tilde, sitting next to him, was also looking at her through narrowed, hostile eyes. Relieved, thrilled, and ashamed all at the same time, Antaska looked away quickly. She looked down at her plate and began to eat her food in slow motion. Breaking through the usual silence at meals, M. Hoivel spoke to her out loud. You look very tired, he said. It's been a long day. I'm glad you were able to go with me to my classes, but maybe you should get some more rest after dinner. That sounds like a good idea, Antaska agreed. After that, she was silent, and M. Hoivel didn't speak to her again. Antaska